welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. It's good to be with you at OC Talk Radio. Today, we're doing a timely show as a society, we're deep in the initial stages of this coronavirus issue on March 18th, 2020, where virtually everything is canceled or closed. Schools and churches are canceled, bars, clubs are closed, restaurants are closed, closed to the public except for takeout, no gathering of people at all, so all events are canceled from concerts to sporting events to conferences. And worst of all, Starbucks is limited to drive-through, which is a pain in the butt. But as our friend Terry Hershey wrote in his blog this week, Sabbath Moment. Terry, what do you call it, a blog, a newsletter, a post?
I call it whatever makes people feel good.
Okay, so that blog. What, as he mentioned in that, one very important thing has not been canceled, and that is hope. I love that idea, that hope has not been canceled. Terry writes, and he begins with these words, pandemic, not an easy opening to follow, but the world has shifted, and the pain and sacrifice are real. But here's what I know. Life didn't stop, and the earth still turns. And as I write these words, the moon shines brightly through the fir branches on the 200-foot, 120-year-old trees by my house. I won't pretend. Sometimes I want to close my eyes, but fear doesn't help any one of us. I like that opening line, Terry. I like the idea. The world has shifted, but life didn't stop, and the earth still turns.
That's true.
Yeah, and you know, we have we definitely have certain reason for concern for our safety and health, and but it is by no means time to panic, or even as you said, even fear, because fear doesn't help, and neither does panic. Panic doesn't help. Instead, now is a time for rational, thoughtful self-care and concerns of others and care of others. Although our life today oddly seems more complicated with all of these stipulations, they have actually been radically simplified. As I wrote in my blog on Sunday, there can be a surprising hidden upside to the forced life of solitude and release from so much activity, and giving us an opportunity to take advantage of reflection, contemplation, meditation. But that's just one thing we could do. Terry is, I love this. Terry, you suggested five things to do during this time that everything has been canceled except hope. And you're the one that doesn't like lists.
No, I know. I'm not a list maker.
So let's go to our regular opening, Yo Hirsch. What's up there in Vashon Island?
Life is good on Vashon Island. It's an amazing thing that a lot of people said, I wish I had time. I wish I had, back when life was busy and hectic and everything was open and going, the number one complaint was, boy, I wish I had time for myself or the people who were important to me. Well, now we do.
Yeah, and we don't know what to do with it.
And there's a lot of people already on Facebook are saying, you know, I'm looking for whatever else to fill the time.
It says. Besides porn?
Yeah.
Do you remember the old Susan Ertz quote that you and I used to use in lectures all the time? People who long for immortality but don't know what to do on a rainy Sunday afternoon.
It's a fabulous quote.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked your post this week. You know, I think I sent you a note saying I liked it, and you had a line that especially resonated with me, and the line is, it is essential to do our part, to do our part to slow the fear and mute the voices of alarm and panic. I love that, that we play a role in that. But, you know, Terry, that's so difficult to do when, even though I don't watch it, I know it's going on, but you have the media, it seems, with the intention of raising the panic and fear because those concepts sell. They're going to sell radio shows. They're going to sell newspapers, magazines. And so the degree that they can get more interest in that panic actually contributes to the devaluing of our life. What do you think on that?
Well, actually, I mean, there were two things about that. One is responsibility, and that is yes, because if I start with the assumption that whatever has happened to me, see, this is the whole Viktor Frankl thing. You can take everything away from me, but you cannot take away my conscience. In other words, the choices that I make with
my choices. Yes, yes.
Yeah, you can't take that away from me. And it's the same. In other words, I have to begin with the assumption that there's an empowerment at my core that is available to me, regardless of what's going on around me. That's still available to me. So it doesn't really matter what the story is around me per se. Could be quite dire, but inside of me, there's an empowerment. And so I've got to begin by saying, do I want it or not? And if I want it, okay, now, then there are choices to be made. Good. And the point of saying there are choices to be made means I am not at the mercy of whatever this is. Now, granted, if it's a storm, I'm buffeted, but I'm not at the mercy of it, just like Frankl said. He was in a concentration camp, but he wasn't at the mercy of it. And it's the same with this. And so that's the starter. It's just the start. Anyone who says, I don't take responsibility, is playing games with words. No. Everyone has to start by saying, I take responsibility. I do. And I will take responsibility for the choices I make because I'm empowered to make choices now. And it's a wonderful place to begin with. So the helpful thing about that is there's some clarity that comes in when I see the storm around me. And so that's for starters. The second thing is, with the media thing, I have two ways to look at this, Charles. One is, I say, I don't get what that is, because the media, I mean, there's a thousand TV channels to watch,
right,
and or radio shows,
right,
and or podcasts. I mean, so what do you mean by media? Do some people inflate it? Absolutely. Do some people inflate it? Absolutely. But of the quote media, I read four newspapers, and I read three magazines. I read them. And I go to the WHO and the CDC, World Health Organization.
What the hell do you do with the rest of the day?
I read fast. So when I'm done with those, this is over. That's my last cup of coffee.
Holy cow.
But the point is, not one single one of those has elevated any of the stories to a panic situation. So I don't know what that means about the media doing that. I don't get that.
Okay, I'll take that. I'll take that criticism. Yeah, because I don't listen to them that much. It's really infrequent.
I know, but I always am fascinated by people who say that, and I say, oh, good, give me an illustration.
Yeah.
Because now we're back to responsibility. If there is a media, and there are, if there are media outlets, because we can't just say media. That's like saying to Austin, baseball player. No, there are some good ones and bad ones. You don't just say baseball player. And same with media. And the point is, if I have responsibility, I'm empowered to choose the ones that are balanced and to choose the ones that are thoughtful and to choose the ones that are reflectful.
Well, see, that's what I want to focus on today, because I'm not sure our audience, in given this circumstance, is even familiar with options for what is thoughtful and what is reflective and what they can do during this time, because they're so used to it. It's like, Terry, it kind of reminds me of my retirement where I said I was useless and bored. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't come up with what to do because I had no options or alternatives at that point. And I have a feeling that's what a lot of people are facing. They have no options or alternatives to what their lifestyle could be like. What a different lifestyle is going to be like. I just read a post from a friend on Facebook, and I've asked her to be on the podcast, and she had 16 reasons of positive things that could come out of this about how to learn online schooling, how to do online business, how to do remote business, the decrease in automobile emissions, and she had 16 different things that were really positive, you know, that just like, you know, how dare you come up with a positive thing on this?
Right.
And
absolutely.
And I think we need to help people with that. And I would like to begin by doing that. And I want, instead of me reading from your post, your blog, your newsletter, your Sabbath moment, I would like you to read from it, and I kind of queued you up what I would like you to read and finish with the word remains.
Here's the deal. When life is upside down, we easily forget the fundamental truth that we live from sufficiency, not scarcity, even in times of distress. Church was canceled.
I want to stop maybe at each second. I hadn't planned on doing this, but I think that's a very powerful line when we talk about we're living from sufficiency, not scarcity, that we do have sufficiency.
We have capacity. We have capacity.
Right.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, and that, you know, that goes back to the responsibility thing. You're not at the mercy of. Even in times of distress, church was canceled. March Madness was canceled. I'll add this: the Masters golf for an addict like me was canceled. Public gatherings have been canceled, and there is more to come. But hope will not be canceled. Conversations will not be canceled. Friendship will not be canceled. Gardening will not be canceled. Watching the moonlight filter through the trees will not be canceled. Love will not be canceled. Music will not be canceled. Reading will not be canceled. Self-care will not be canceled. Prayer will not be canceled. And lifting one another's spirits will not be canceled. May we lean into the good stuff that remains.
That's brilliant, Hirsch. That's really good shit. I just think all those, we think of what is canceled, and it is what is canceled are a lot of external actions. You know, we're limited in our activity, but our interior life has not been canceled at all. Our interior life still blossoms.
It's an interesting thing that goes on because. I mean, the pandemic is a real fear. I mean, and I will, you know, I mean, I will just be honest to say, when they talk about people who are liable to or susceptible, I qualify. I'm over 65, and I have asthma. That means I can be immunocompromised.
Well, I'm 70, and I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
Does that qualify me?
Yeah, it qualifies you in many ways not to be a member of clubs. But that's a whole different thing. Actually, that's not true. There are many clubs. That's all they have.
It's just I belong to a couple.
Yeah.
But you are, yeah. but you are, your immune system. What do you call it? You are immunocompromised. Is that it?
Immunocompromised. Anyway, yeah. So the point is it's real. But the remarkable thing is, you know, for a living, when people ask what I do for a living, I'm in the refueling business. For years, all I've written about is sanctuary, self-care, pausing, you know, letting your soul catch up with your body, emotional well-being. That's what I've written about. And this is what's interesting, Charles. So when I do workshops about sanctuary, so this was before there was a coronavirus, before, and by that I just mean 2-3 months ago at an event. I start by asking people, right, how many in the last week have been exhausted? How many hands go up? All of them.
Of course.
How many have been hurried?
Yeah.
How many have been distracted? In other words, I go through the entire litany. How many have been pissed off at people you're not really angry at? It's a whole litany of stuff. And okay, so what can we do about it? In other words, how can we take responsibility and choose from there? Now, here's what's interesting. Every single one of them say, thank God, I would love to spend time just with my soul catching up with my body, just with self-care. Just
is that Sankofa?
Sankofa, yeah. It's going back to reclaim what we have forgotten, Sankofa. And every single person says, I want to do that. Well, that's what we're doing right now. That's what I encourage people to do.
And I don't want to say we're being forced into it, but we've been given an opportunity. And we've been given an opportunity because we don't have the distractions available to us that we had two weeks ago.
Let me ask it to you this way, in a very direct thing. You were in a place for 10 days of silent retreat, and you were quarantined, as it were.
I was.
For 10 days. Were you forced to do that?
Nope.
No. But you could have misused that time. Is that not true?
I could have, yeah. It would have been difficult because it was, you know, there were Nazi guards there, so.
But I mean, misused it mentally is my point.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I could have, but I went with the intention of personal discovery, and I realized
the thing is, that's the thing about this. When people say, "What are you doing about the coronavirus?" I'm living today with the intention of personal discovery. I'm washing my hands.
Okay, this is Charlie Hedges, and this has been our podcast. No, I'm saying you just said it right there. I mean, we have an opportunity for personal discovery and enlightenment, and maybe even, as my friend wrote, I said in her 16 positives, learning to live life differently. We're being forced to live more remotely and work more remotely and live this way, and who knows, it might take hold a little bit. You know, I'm not that optimistic, but it may take hold a bit, and that would be quite wonderful. Now you've got 5 suggestions of how people might take advantage of this opportunity and might go down the road of self-discovery or personal discovery. Yeah. But I think one thing you pointed out in your post, that some of us have advantages over others. Do you remember that quote? It was your Facebook post?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember what that said?
Yeah. Yeah, because the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, says to prevent coronavirus, you need to stay home and avoid physical contact and don't go into large crowds. And those of us who are introverts saying, what we say is that we've been preparing for this moment our entire life.
Yeah. So tell me again, help me understand, where is the problem?
Exactly. The first comment of an introvert says, thank God, Amen. Praise the Lord.
Okay, let's go to you. You know what I want to do is we have never done anything like this before, but I want to go through your list. You've got 5 points, and I want to talk about each of the 5 points. But before we do, Paul, do you think it's time we take a break?
Yeah.
We're going to take a brief break, and then we're going to go through your 5 points. I guess it's time for me to come onto the show. What do you think? This is Charlie Hedges, and this is The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I'm with my good friend Terry Hershey, who is a regular guest on the show. And we are talking about opportunities, unexpected opportunities that present themselves due to this quasi-quarantine, what are they calling it? Something, there's a term that they're using about staying at home and
shelter in place.
That this gives you an opportunity. We're going to talk, you've got 5 ideas about how we might take advantage of that. And your first idea is, it doesn't hurt to pause. And I guess what that means is, it really doesn't hurt to read the book Pause either, does it?
Yeah, my book. Yeah, Power Pause. Yeah, yeah. That's what I meant. Number one to be is buy my book. Well, if something causes us to pause, take advantage of it. It's an extraordinary gift. It's the first question I ask anybody who's got decision making of any kind, is just tell me where you sat still. Tell me where you slowed down, because slowing down lets us breathe, lets us take inventory of what's going on in our spirit. The gratitude actually begins there. So just tell me where, and that. A lot of it is the breathing thing, just the permission to do that breathing. You know, we've seen that, you know, as parents, you see that when kids are acting up, you just tell them, okay, breathe, just breathe. Or maybe I'm thinking of wives with their husbands. You know, calm down.
and then there are times, don't breathe, mm-hmm. like for
yeah,
10
exactly.
minutes.
Don't breathe. Yeah, for no, yeah, exactly. But yes, the pause is a good thing.
What is it? What are the advantages?
Well, the thing that is going on in life is going to be busy and hectic, and diversion is the name of the game. And if there's a crisis going on during the diversion, then the diversion could be seeded with panic and or alarm, and pause just kind of quiets all that. It quiets that noise. Let that noise be quiet for a minute. And pause is not an easy thing for us to do. I mean, even in public events, you know, where someone says, "Let's just have a moment of silence."
Talk about discomfort.
Yeah, the longest I've ever counted was 7 seconds.
You're not kidding.
Joking.
You're not kidding.
Yeah,
no.
Right. Let's have a moment of silence, 7 seconds.
I always love it in the Episcopal Church. We go through a liturgy of prayer, and then at the end of the prayer, it's, let us now pray for our own needs and the needs of those we're concerned about. And I swear the priest does not give you 3 to 5 seconds. And I'm always looking up at them and thinking, how can you know? Because they're ending the prayer right there and say, wait a minute, you just asked me to pray for myself and other people. You got to give me a few moments to do that.
Yeah, with that kind of time, you can only play for a friend named Ed, because it has to be a really short name that you can do that with.
Yeah. You know, the idea of pause, you know, two or three things come to my mind in my life, in that, you know, pretty much a regular listeners know that I meditate. Well, I have started before I meditate. I sort of meditate before I meditate. I pause and contemplate to allow the thoughts to get through. You know, I know the thoughts that are going to be, you know, monkey mind during meditation. So, but I take this time to pause. I pause before meditation. I know that's got to sound really weird. I pause. Go ahead.
No, that makes sense, because your thing about monkey mind is real. It's true.
Yeah, and then I have a chair in my bonus room that I just sit, and it's my reading chair. And there are these last few days or days that I just sit there and think. You know, and it may not be a long time, maybe 15 minutes, 20 minutes, but I don't have the desire to read. And then I've had some real serious business issues in Uganda that have kept me on computer. And I go downstairs around 7 or 7:30 in the evening, and my wife is not watching TV. My wife is reading. And that is not that's not our normal behavior. There's something about the TV is less appealing now than it was when we needed the escape.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to know. That's great.
That it's really kind of surprising that the TV has become, TV has become less appealing for me
quite a while. What's fascinating about the pause thing is that when you give space to sit with that, you ask the question is, what do I wish to do? In other words, so I'm not at the mercy of the choice. In other words, the thing I would normally do, flip on the TV. In other words, it's just a habit that's been ingrained because I haven't asked the question, what do I choose to do?
That is true. That is true. And
you know that better than anybody in a 12-step group, is that I grab the bottle because it's not a choice. And so I have to make it a choice.
That is true. That too is true. So I really do like this time of pause, but there's got to be an intentionality to it, don't you think, Terry?
Yeah. You don't pause when you can celebrate like a pause that happens now. In other words, go ahead and celebrate it, and then give yourself. People say, "I don't know what to do with the pause." Well, it's not a contest. I mean, you're not being judged or graded on it.
And that is what we think when you and I give people, if we're giving people lists or suggestions. There is this temptation to feel as if they're being graded on it, that there's a certain way you have to do it. It's like meditation.
Yeah.
You know, you grade yourself on meditation. How much was I into non-monkey mind thought and into, you know, some sort of meditative space? And I have that ugly habit of grading myself on that many times, saying, oh, that wasn't very good. My mind, you know, my monkey mind was just racing around all the time.
Those other ones kind of help shore up the reality. The others in the list shore up the reality that you're not being graded on this. This isn't a test to pass.
Okay, so let's you know, we did the pause, and this is a lot of time during this pause. You know, I could probably spend the whole podcast on the pause, but this is where you were talking about discovering yourself. This is the great opportunity to discover yourself and to discover much about yourself, because it is just you and
so you can ask yourself real questions. Why am I afraid? What makes me afraid? Why am I alarmed? What What other things in my life have alarmed me? What other things in my life have made me afraid? In other words, you get to know some things about yourself. In other words, that I made assumptions about. I assumed I was always afraid or alarmed because of certain things, and that may not be the case. Have there ever been times when, instead of fear, I said, no, I'm instead of scarcity, which is fear, I said, no, there's sufficiency here, there's choices. In other words, see, it allows yourself to take inventory of some things in your life that you haven't looked at. It's been a cupboard you never looked at, which has got good stuff in it.
Do you have an example of that so you could help us on that, where you have seen scarcity instead of, you've seen sufficiency instead of scarcity?
Yeah, I'll give you a really clear example of a woman comes to, because her life has been upended. This has nothing to do with the virus thing, but it's just about life being messy and bad, and and abuse and all kinds of bad stuff happening to her, such that she feels shamed, feels like she has nothing to offer, nothing to give, and so she feels empty. Scarcity, and she says, and in the thing, in the conversation that we were having, she said, "I'd love to do this. I would love to do what you said, but I have no courage, because to do that take courage, and I have none." And I said to her, "Do you know, to say those words out loud to me was a pretty courageous thing to do."
Yeah.
Because your internal self wouldn't let you say that even to yourself. And so it just shocked her, stunned her, that the very thing she said she didn't have, it looked like she has a little bit of.
That's a great illustration. So we're talking, our first suggestion is that you, and our first strong suggestion, and for me, well, all of them are important. So I was going to say it's the most important, but it can't. It's like me saying this is my favorite Bible verse, and then I'll go to the next one and say, this is it. But your second point was, you asked the question, and I found this to be very, very fascinating question. Who are your people? What are you trying to get with that?
Well, because the reality is that part of the sufficiency is that, instead of scarcity, is that we're not on this journey alone. We're connected. And so when anybody goes through anything in their life that is upsetting, that's the first question I ask them. Tell me who your people are. In other words, they say, I want to get over this or that or the other thing. I say, fine, I can give you a list to get over it, but tell me who your people are. Because there's no getting over it without your people.
Yeah, and that's a very difficult one, though, because not all of us have a lot of people.
I think, of course, this is an aside, but one of the discouraging and distressing things about the use of friend on social media is that we take away the meaning for the people who truly are our friends,
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why I barely...
And the people say, and who are your people? I mean, God bless you if you can count them on one hand. That's a ton right there. That's a lot.
That's great.
They need to know. I mean, you need to say to the, and so I said to them, I said, tell me who your people are. And and it's okay to say, I'm not sure. But then when you go through it, well, there's just two people. Well, good. Two is a bigger number than zero. And there are a lot of people who swear they come up empty. They got nobody. I say, okay, in the interim, I'm going to be one of your people then.
And you hand out your phone number?
I say, when you need someone to listen, I'll be the guy.
Yeah, just find your way to Vashon Island.
Yeah, you got to get here first.
Yeah, but I do think you make a really good point on who are your people, that to know that we aren't in this alone, and you make that that point all throughout the your writing of Sabbath Moment. That we are not in this alone, and that we need to know who your people are. I'll tell you, let me give you a strange example of that for my son, for instance. The Padres told him he's on his way home now because, you know, baseball's canceled. And right. He's on his way home now. And they told him, they told all of the players to avoid meeting with their parents over 65, not because of danger to the player, but because of the safety of the parent, that the player could have been exposed to the coronavirus, and so we won't see our son for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yes, I understand. I understand that.
But it doesn't mean we don't talk. You know, he calls almost every day, so we get a chance to talk.
Yes, we have the capacity. Unlike if this had happened in the 16th century, we have the capacity to stay connected.
Yeah, yeah. Like you called early this week just to BS.
Right.
That was great.
Right.
Okay, let's go to the third one, and this is where some of us. This is a great one for you who live in the country, but for those of us who live in urban, it's difficult, Terry, and that's savor beauty. So you're going to have to redefine beauty for us, because I am the first to say that Orange County is not beautiful, save, you know, maybe a dozen places that you could go to.
Well, that's big. Beauty happens can happen in very small ways. I mean, beauty. I think there's extraordinary beauty in the way the steam rises from the coffee cup, the first cup of coffee I pour.
You know what? That hits me. That requires something that you and I have talked about quite a bit. Is that talks about paying attention.
Yes, paying attention and having your senses, all of your senses awake, because you have the sense of smell that goes with that too, and that's because the point is, beauty requires you to say, "Oh my God, that's beautiful." Just like I talked about the moon, I was writing the thing about pandemic, and the moon is shining in the window. If I had ignored the moon, I could keep going on with the pandemic, but the moon shining in the window was equally as important as the pandemic.
You know, it was. And again, this is a pause moment.
Correct.
That we are taking in and looking at it. Okay, let's go to
you. Actually said,
go ahead.
Fourth one, yeah. No, I mean, just say it out loud. That's pretty.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
There's remarkable things that can be beautiful. The color of the sky can be beautiful. The smile of someone can be beautiful. A sentence that's written in a book that you read can be beautiful.
Okay, so we've talked about take time to pause, reflect, think about yourself, maintain your relationships, who are your people, maybe even take extra time to call people and to chat with them. Savor beauty. And then you write the one that's find ways to be grateful. You know, in the 12-step program, making great gratitude lists are really important. And there are people that just absolutely swear by them, that it changes their life. I've not had that experience, but I know too many people that have, that I don't disavow that power. What is the power of being grateful?
Well, if you're grateful, you're all in. You're not withholding anything.
Yeah, and what would its antonym be?
An antonym to gratitude would, I think of it just as like wearing some sort of armor, coat of armor.
Yeah, words, armor, callousness.
Yeah, you're literally blocked. You're blocked. Yeah. I mean, gratitude lets life in. Lets the conversation in. Lets the moment in. The sacrament of the present moment lets the present in. Lets it in. That's what gratitude does.
You know what we're doing here is that as in talking to you about it, you know, I read about it, but now in talking to you about it, we are all of these things so far, the three that have followed pause, have to do with pause. You have to pause in order to be able to
yeah, it's the trigger.
Think about your people, how to savor beauty and to find ways to be grateful and things to be, not just ways to be grateful, but things to be grateful about. I mean, we have so many things to be grateful about. I mean, I look at my life and I live in frickin' Disneyland. I'm used to, you know, I'm used to going to Uganda and seeing a whole different lifestyle. And I live in Disneyland.
Absolutely.
And I am, there are things I am grateful for that, you know, do not hit the spiritual links, you know, that I'm grateful for God and my relationship with God. You know what I'm grateful for? I'm grateful for my Lexus.
Yeah.
I love my Lexus, you know. It's a great car and as I was thinking about reading about the mystics, it made me feel very guilty to feel grateful about my Lexus. But it is something when I get into it, I'm grateful to get into it and drive it. And it makes me happy.
Yeah, I feel the same way about my Prius.
Yeah, except it doesn't have the 16 speakers in it.
I don't. Well, I live on a place where the longest drive I'm going to have is maybe 3.5 minutes.
Yeah. So you don't even get to listen to podcasts.
No, heavens no. I know. The whole point, no, you don't listen to anything. That's the whole point, is you just get to be in your car without noise.
Yeah. So you're taking a pause. Let's talk about your final one as we're wrapping up here. And you write that any crisis reminds us of the truly vulnerable. What are you getting at with that?
I mean, it's the same thing that you experienced when you go to Uganda. You're aware that our way of looking at life and the world here is skewed. Now, the remarkable thing is we don't have to go to Uganda to find vulnerable people. But there are a lot of people who don't have the kind of things that they're... I mean, life has been harder on them.
Yeah, they don't have Lexi.
Exactly. And so the thing about the... If I believe that no one is on this journey alone, if I believe that we're better together, stronger together, which was way back at the beginning of what we were talking about, then that means we're only as strong as the weakest among us. And so how are we caring for them? How are we bringing them along?
Who would you be talking about, Terry? Are you talking about people that we are close to or people that we don't know, such as homeless, that we may not personally know?
On a social setting, what's happening now with the homeless population is going to be staggering because there's no way for that kind of quarantine.
Well, they're opening a lot of the hotels right now. I'm reading a lot. Okay. The hotels that are empty, they're opening them to homeless.
I'm glad to know that. And then the second thing is, I mean, just personally with people that we know, when people have go through any kind of emotional, a very difficult emotional time, there's a vulnerability, and they wonder if anyone is there for them. And so that tough time may be emotional, it may be physical, it may be financial, but they're in need.
You know, that reminds me.
This is me talking personally about Orange County, but one of the things that struck me when I was a part of that is you never were allowed to show that you were vulnerable. Well, you weren't encouraged to. It's not that you weren't allowed to. You weren't encouraged to. I felt like I needed to project that I had everything together.
That is, especially in your career, because you were...
Yes, exactly.
Because you were deemed as the guy that did have it together.
Yeah.
You know, you
so I had to tell them that I am not only, clergy without fault, but I drive a Lexus.
What did you drive in Orange County? Do you have a Beamer?
For a while I drove a Mercedes. I mean, it's that kind of thing. I didn't want to. I didn't need to.
But it was all about
image.
Yeah.
You get that.
Yep. I was just writing in my journal entry, I've been reading Thomas Merton and in his Hermitage. And all he needed, I was thinking what he needed in his Hermitage was shelter, a bed, a cassock, food, a book, and writing materials, whether it was pen and paper or a computer. And that's it. It's done.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
Everything he needs. And I looked at, and there was part of me, Terry, that looked at that and I said, If I were a single man, I really wouldn't need anything else. Would I be happy that way? I can't say that, but as far as actual need, I wouldn't need anything else.
That's a great illustration. Because back to the gratitude one, what we're grateful for also gives. We can do inventory on the kind of things in our life that we don't really need, that we have that we don't need because they don't bring gratitude to us.
Oh, man. And believe me, we are collectors of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Terry, this has been great. Thank you for the time. Thank you for the idea that hope has not been canceled, although we've not even really talked about hope. But we've talked about
every single one of those things we talked about is really the fuel that makes hope alive.
That makes hope alive, exactly. And that is what we need to do during this time. During this time, I think this time is calling for a lot of people to be, let me just use the tired phrase, but to think out of the box, to think differently, and to think creatively about what you can do that's better for you and for your family, and how you can maximize this time rather than looking at it as a time of drudgery and just stuck at home watching TV.
Just like we said with, the number of people said, gosh, I wish I had some time just for me. Think of the number of people who've said to you, I wish I could have my life with just a fresh start, or how do they say it? Maybe a fresh chapter. What is your thing?
Next chapter.
Yeah.
New chapter.
Yeah. Well, by God, here you go. This is it.
This is the next chapter. And you know what? I do believe this is somewhat the next chapter, even after the coronavirus is over, that there are going to be some changes as a result.
People say to me, people, and I'm going to have this in my blog next week, but people say to me, life is going to change. And my answer is, I hope so. I hope so. There are some choices I made with my life that weren't necessarily healthy. So I hope so.
I think that's a good way to close this up, Terry, is that things are going to change. I hope so. So, Hirsch, thanks for spending time with me today. And as we went through the Sabbath moment, I hope our audience got a taste of the depth of Sabbath moment and the readability And it can be found at terryhershey.com. And I also want to thank all of you for listening and tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.